Possible Poetry, ein Podcast über neue Welten und Wege in der Poesie mit Dirk Hülstrunk. Possible Poetry, a podcast about new worlds and roads of poetry with your host Dirk Hülstrunk. Welcome to the second episode of Possible Poetry, a podcast about new worlds and paths of poetry. My name is Dirk Hülstrunk. I am an author, translator, and cultural activist from Frankfurt am Main. This episode will be completely in English, but I hope I can provide a transcript and some detailed info with the show notes on our Podigee blog. In this podcast, I want to introduce you to international artists and projects that take particularly innovative new paths in poetry. I would like to explore marginal and border areas. My guests for this episode are challenging forms and ideas of poetry from very different perspectives. We will talk about conceptual poetry, technology, and artificial intelligence, as well as performance, multimedia poetry, and sound poetry that is as innovative as possible, but also rooted in ancient and even mystic traditions. We will also talk about a new international network and community of experimental poetry that my guests have initiated during the corona pandemic. So welcome to our truly intercontinental podcast talk with Felipe Kussen from Santiago de Chile and Martin Baquero, who is also from Chile but is now living in Paris since many years. I know that as artists, you pursue very different ways and ideas, but you have also a close connection as friends, collaborators, and activists in the international experimental artists scene. So, hola Felipe, hola Martin. It's really great to have you both here today.
Hi. Thank you very much for inviting us.
In a moment, with Felipe, we are really friends and complementary, and we have a kind of same taste with different kind of approach to the object of the poem, you know. But with Felipe, always we propose things. So I propose things that nobody listened in the world. Felipe, not everything, but when he feels that it could work, he likes to say, "Okay, let's do it." And he has the art, like kind of a sweet discipline at the same time to make the things happen in the best manner. We are like complementary, like Apollinion, Dionysiac way.
Before we go on, maybe it's time to get a little more info about you both. So these are really bits of pieces I scraped together on the internet about you. If there's anything wrong, so please correct me. So about Felipe. Felipe Kussen is a scientific researcher, author, and artist. His main fields of research are experimental literature and mysticism. I hope that is right.
Yes.
Okay. He holds a PhD in humanities and teaches at the University of Santiago de Chile. His projects are often minimalistic and conceptual, like negative poetics is one of your big things. We'll talk about that later. Which examines the representation of nothingness in literature and visual arts. Big. His latest project is a poetry book. We will talk about that too, The Joy of Rain. Martin Baquero, he's also from Chile, but now I think you're mostly based in Paris for quite some years now. Yeah, he studied electroacoustic composition in Paris Municipal Music Conservatory, has a PhD in psychopathology. He works mainly as a sound poet and is a very intense live performer, but he also integrates multiple other art forms from film to dance to performance and often collaborates with other artists. He's also done theater, cinema, and radio works and lectures. And outside of this, I think that's very interesting. You work as a psychoanalyst, is that right? Okay, right. Persons suffering with severe autism and other such psychological disorders. And the latest publication is a very beautiful and intense record, a Protoverb from Barcelona-based, I think, Sonora's label. Is that right, or is it?
It's a collaboration between Erratum. Erratum is a label, sound label of Joaquín Montesui, that is like 30 years old and make like a lot of poetry, noise, experimental. And Sonoras is was another project that we made with Escofet and Altayo and Tiselli some years ago. Eugenio Tiselli, Edouard Escofet, and Gerard Altayo. And it's like it started like a kind of review in Barcelona after becomes a printer. Yeah, we make like a cycle of performance and little publications in set of. That idea started when I was Joaquim Montesquieu proposed me a lot of years ago to make an album in his label. I take 10 years to prepare it. I was like so I didn't know what to do, and in a moment we traveled together to Barcelona to meet Edward and Gerard to create the last track of the album because anyway it was a long long magnificent work. And I said to guys, hey guys, why not we don't create a new collection of some poetry in vinyl, and we make that like the sound part in Paris with Joaquim Montesquieu and the printer side the part and Edouard Escofet and Gerard Altayo in Barcelona. Let's that it sounds like that. And that album was the first of that collection. But my album was became a collection, and that is great. We are collective, connected in a way, and that is, I think, it's really important in poetry and in all life, human, the connection and the togetherness, and especially in this moment, we've got wedding virus, now it's a war, and what we poets we can like, it's important to show that kind of brotherhood. I don't know how to spell it, but I was, I don't know, so many times with Felipe, like chairing some stage, and Felipe helped me a lot to finish the performance at the end, or I know he never needs, but he needs some help. I will be there,
Of
to help if
course.
there, and there is a kind of generosity and connection and group, collective capacity of living, and that is for me is one of the most important human experience that poetry can afford in this contemporary world.
And I think what Martin says it has to do also because we're not competing for anything. I mean, experimental poetry, well, there are almost no prizes, no, I mean, there are some things you can try to achieve, but it's a more relaxed, I mean, of course, it's not saying that we are like a hippie community, but I usually find that people in this field are more relaxed and more eager to share, to there's a kind of I don't know, not so much possessiveness of the work. So for me at least it's like a very relaxed way to work in difference, for example, at the university, at the academy, where there's a lot of competitions and all that. When I'm in talking with you or with other friends, it's more relaxed, and I really enjoy it for that also.
Since we have already talked about your new sound poetry LP called Protoverb, which is also the result of some intense networking going on between Europe and Chile, I think it's time now to listen to some snippets of this unique and very intense work. All the records actually come in a beautiful hand-printed sleeve. They are very unique works of art. So now let's take a breath and listen to the beginning of Protoverb by Martin Baquero. Wow. I think from listening to the opening track of Protoverb, you can get a little idea of the density and intensity of Martin Baquero's work and especially his live performances. But before we talk more about your work, Martin, I would like to ask Felipe. Your work is quite different. It's rather controlled, minimalistic, conceptual, and rational. It comes in different forms and shapes. Not all of them are easily understood as poetry. A lot of your work is visual. You created a book that is exclusively made up of book cover ideas. You created a series of copied self-portraits that get copied again and again and get worse in quality, and then you ask a face recognition software what it sees. But there is also at least one series of sound poems I know of called Quick Faith, and I would like to listen to that first. Quick Faith. So what is your connection to mysticism and experimental art?
I have very different interests in which I'm working. For example, I'm also very interested in pop culture, in pop music and disco music and electronic music, whatever. But since I was 15, and I've been interested in experimental poetry since I was 20 and whatever. And my interest in mysticism is not like, it's not so much a private interest, like a spiritual interest. It's more like a formal aesthetic interest. I always like to say that what interests me is not the mystical experience, because I don't know if that's real. I'm mostly atheist. One day I believe in God, one day not. I do not participate in any religion. But what interests me is what happens when someone has this kind of experience and tries to express it. That's the problem I'm interested in. When someone like Hildegard von Bingen, for example, she's one of my heroes, sees all that kind of stuff and tries to write about it and talks about the problems trying to write about it. And also she imagines things that if you represent them visually, as they were done in a couple of their visionary books, you have like really strange images. It's like surrealist images made in 12th century, right? I always have this idea that a mystic is an experimental poet, not because he or she likes to, but he or she is obliged to. If you have that kind of experience, you can't write anything normal. You have to break the language or do very strange stuff with the language and the images that you have in your specific context, of course. But so that's for me is amazing. And I had the chance to study at the university with a couple of professors that were very important to me. And then it was when I had this class about, it was a class about negativity in the troubadours and in the contemporary poetry. And that was when it started my interest in not only in mysticism, but especially in negative theology. And of course, like the most important figure in that tradition is Meister Eckhart, another German guy who is really, really important from the 14th century. And this idea that you can't say anything about God, you can't pray to God, you have no language to talk about God. So that for me is a very interesting poetic, artistic problem. That's when it mixes. In that part is when I like to think together of mysticism and experimental poetry and art.
Do you have something that's called the office of nothingness or something like that?
Yeah.
So the idea of nothingness and what to do with it
yeah.
Is also connected to that idea.
Exactly.
Of negative the office of, theology. Yeah.
Exactly. The office of nothingness is an expression by Miguel de Molinos, a mystic, a Spanish mystic from the 17th century. He also has another expression, the fabric of annihilation. It's very strange expressions. And that's the name of the book I wrote, La Oficina de la Nada, Contemporary Negative Poetics, that I published last year with all this research. But also is the name of a group we have with Marcela, Megumi, and Ricardo. And it's a group we research together and also have a curatorial projects or artistic projects. We organize art book festivals, sound installations, etc. So it's a double use of that same expression.
I really like that idea that also mysticism is a really... is so crazy that it needs to break any
exactly,
boundaries. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah.
So that's also crazy.
And that is why sometimes it's very heterodox. It's strange. Sometimes the church like declare that these people are saints, like Hildegard von Bingen, but sometimes they expel them from the church. Like Meister Eckhart, he was prosecuted. He disappeared for some years. So it's very strange. It's always breaking the rules.
But the interesting thing about you is that you have this mystic ideas about especially the formal expressions and
exactly.
Ideas about nothingness, but also you have a lot of use of technology. You know, you use computer language and copy stuff, and but also I think artificial intelligence recently.
Yeah.
So how does that go together?
I like very much the title of this book by Jerome Rodenberg, Technicians of the Sacred. Well, these are the kind of things that we talk a lot with Martin always. Mm. And I like this idea of not. I mean, to think about technology in every age. I mean, not this idea of that the primitive didn't know about technology. They had their own technologies, different technologies than ours, of course. But this idea and kind of artificiality also, like to produce something mystic or to produce a connection with divinity. And you need to make rituals. You need to make, I don't know, prayers together. You need to... I don't know, do a lot of stuff to make it work. In my case, of course, my instrument is the computer, is where I do everything always. And I always, when I was a kid, I always liked programming. I mean, very, very simple, of course. But when I had the chance of starting to work with the sound programs and later with synthesizers, effects and all that, I really became crazy. I mean, it's so funny. I like very much the idea of poetry as a kind of play. Just, I mean, to put it more simpler, I write poetry or make music just not to get bored. I mean, my main interest is like to have fun, like a kid. That's the idea of using technology, Mike. It's like have moving knobs, and I really have fun when I do that. So it's not more complex than that.
I think the play idea is also one of the key ideas in creating art at all, because people get bored, and so they have to do something.
Exactly.
They either invent technologies that make life easier,
exactly.
or they do some creative stuff.
We call it experimental, but it's just this idea of let's see what happens if I try this or if I try that, whatever. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And I think also maybe your latest project or is actually a book, and it's a real
Yeah.
poetry book. Well, real
Exactly.
somehow real poetry book
Yeah, for me,
about
it's a totally real book. Yeah.
it's a real book. You can buy it, and it's about nature, which is really great. But there's something special behind that book too. So maybe can you just tell a little bit about this project?
I was hearing a lot about different kinds of artificial intelligence these years, of course, as everyone. And I have made different projects with artificial intelligence, but this is the last one. And it's very simple. It's like writing a book. I don't decide anything in the book. Everything is decided and written by the artificial intelligence. So I asked the artificial intelligence to give me a title of a poetry book. I asked it to give me the titles of the poems, then to write the poems. And that was like the most normal part. But what I really enjoyed most was when I asked it to write my biography, and it was full of errors. I mean, I was born in 1986, but in the reality, I was born in 1974. And it invented that I had won so many important prizes in my country, things like that. And it also wrote some introduction. And I asked the artificial intelligence to give me the names of important poets. And it gave me the name of some poets, some American poets, I think, that I assume they are important, but I haven't read them. So I guess one or two of them are dead. So there was some mistake there. So, I mean, those errors is what is the part I really enjoy most. And also, I wanted to make like end the full circle, and I asked the artificial intelligence to write the post with which I would be sharing this material online. So the post on Facebook, on Instagram, on WhatsApp were written by the computer. And at the end, like the end of the project was that I asked the artificial intelligence to write a bad review about my book, telling that it was written by an artificial intelligence. So that was, so the idea was thinking about the book, but also everything around the book, the paratext, the ways of circulation. That's very important for me always. So that was the project.
So maybe can you just give us a little impression how it sounds, this book?
Yeah, I will read a poem. Let me find.
Ask to the artificial intelligence to read your poem, please. Like.
I've been working a lot in last years about artist books and all that. I have a colleague which I admire very much. She's a professor. She lives in Berlin. Annette Gilbert, maybe you know her. She has done an amazing job writing about experimental poetry, visual poetry, and all that. And she has a writing about an invisible book by Elizabeth Tonart. And in her analysis of that book, she says, you don't need a book to exist, but you need to have a title, another's name. I mean, you can do all the movement of a book, but without a proper book. So it's kind of related to that. I will read my biography, which is the part of I like most. Felipe Carson is a Chilean poet, playwright, and author of several plays and poetry collections. Born in 1986 in Santiago, Chile, Carson began writing plays in his early 20s, and his first collection of poetry was published in 2009. Carson's work is often informed by his experience as a Chilean living in a society that has experienced a long history of political and social upheaval. He has written extensively about the impact of the Pinochet dictatorship on Chile, and his poetry often deals with themes of oppression, injustice, and nostalgia. Carson's works has been widely acclaimed, and he has received numerous awards, including the Chilean National Prize for Literature, the Chilean Literature Prize, and the Chilean National Prize for Poetry. In addition, he has been a re recipient of the Presidential Medal of Honor of Chile, the highest honor bestowed upon a Chilean citizen. Some of those prizes don't even exist, so that's amazing. Yeah,
That's
and
amazing.
always, and the part I like most is all this cliché of living in a Latin American country with dictatorship that obviously everyone pretends that you can only write about that, and that's the cliche that the artificial intelligence is supplying, of course.
Yeah, that's really great, because it's really exposing these kind of cliches, definitely.
Exactly, it's full of cliches.
So we just heard another example of Philippe Cousin's audio series Quick Faith, which seems to demonstrate the fun he has in playing with ideas and forms, and also in turning knobs around, you know. You can find the whole series on Philippe Cousin's Bandcamp website, which I will put in the show notes.
Yeah, that kind of new kind of utilization of intelligence, of culture creation, you know, and Philippe has that great the spirit to make like humor, to make jokes, to make, you know, like became in like the change of level of logic, and that is really, really interesting, and how you manage the language, Felipe, and I with the years I start to appreciate more and more that for us poets it's really important now to propose to the world that kind of capacities of deal with you know, with things, with artificial intelligence, with fear, with the virus, with everything. And for me, that has the connection with mysticism that we have pretty strong with Felipe, about that rehearsal of the emptiness of the, I don't know, the of the everything, I don't know, the dissolution on the total massive transformation, transmutation, metanoia's experience of the human, that you go into something and you became transformed. You know, Ramon Jul, that or Ramon Dolulio, you know, I don't know if you know it, Dirk, but it's a great poet that we, I remember with Felipe, was the first poet that we talked about it. And he was a Catalan poet who created like permutational poetry in the 12th century, you know, and he created like a concentric circles that you can put some letters in a circle, another circle, and you create different poems just to resolve the problem of three monotheism who make war, which they still make war now, you know, and they want to, they create that el arte general para todas las ciencias, or the art for to apport to the world a solution of that totally
for all problems,
for all the difference that create enemies.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect, especially when you talk about it's transformation. We talked about mysticism also already. And now what poets can bring into the world. And I think it's the idea of transforming things, you know, the constant transformation, which is also a transformation between like ideas and language and body and different forms, which brings me a little bit closer to what you're doing, Martin, because I think in contrast to Felipe, you are a much more physical artist. You know, you use your body, your voice very much. You're a performative poet, but also use different other genres and visual things and other performance kind of things. Is that also a kind of constant transformation going on, that your ideas go from from language to sound, from sound to body, from body to visual? Is that a constant transformation you're
I
trying
know.
out?
I love that concept that you just created, the constant transformation. It's great. Constant transmutation.
Or is it
Yeah,
the same idea that transforms into different forms?
but not only transform, also not only change of shape or form, also change of material presence, you know. That is also with Felipe, we're really fanatic of alchemy. In alchemy, you have that capacity of transform, you know, the things in another thing. The transmutation also exists in mysticism, the transfiguration that I experiment a lot with that other kind of mystical people, like schizophrenics or you know, like the people who are classified in psychosis. I work a lot with them, and they are totally connected with that, you know. And a kind of religion in everything. And the other day, I read a sentence of a friend who Sean Rige put in his like an offer for her daughter. He said, "The life in gift brings to you some stones. It's up to you to make some walls or to make some bridge." It's connected to me with another a little text of Freud that is really interesting. Call it the poet. In German, you correct me, Dick, is der Dichter, and that's Fantasiaren, something like that. You know, the poet and the
The poet
fantasy,
and
and
his friends, yeah.
the daydream living. I don't know how to say it. He said to resumate something really interesting. It's like the neurotical. He say like ¿cómo se reprimir? In repress, I repress
They
my
repress.
desire. I repress my desire to adapt myself to the other people. The psychotic schizo say no. I keep my desire at the price of keep me alone of the world. And the poet that he made like the crazy guy, he say, "Hey, I keep my desire, and I take a little bit of break of the world, a little distance, but I re." Retake the, I create a new bridge with one new reality, a new kind of appreciate things. I don't know. It's like the capacity of the poet of transmutate or transform the reality is not only he's experimenting himself in a way, but it's for everyone. Everyone who can, like, you know, can I don't know, read a poem also, or better, read the life of the poets. Because for me, poetry is not only write or not only create. It's create, but not only produce. It's a kind of experience, you know. It's a kind of ethical position of the being, of the existence.
Is there a starting point when you try to create something? Is there a starting point? Do you always start with sound, or is it different for you?
I love the thing that I don't understand. You know, I that is when I feel myself like I'm here, you know, I'm not losing my time. It's when I'm in front of something that I cannot afford it. There is no language, there is not a connection. And you have to invent it. You know, it could be like a simple playing of words, a sound. A color, a dream. I don't know. It's like in a moment that I don't understand what happens, and I need to create my something for. In this moment, it's became a lot of from sound. You know, before I have all time, but you know, to write things, to write poems in my little book. Now I use much more the microphone to take like sound notes. So I start to make now some, I want to call it like in French, it's journal de bord. It's like the book that you write in a boat when you are traveling.
Oh.
But I call it more like a autoportrait, auto-range, in a way like just taking some moments of, I don't know, I'm here now talking with Derek and Felipe, and I feel that the connection between the black and the white, it became a flower. And do not use that. And after that, it starts to construct that. And he can send me to, I used a lot that dictionary of, in French, it's more croisé, means like, you have,
Crossword.
yeah, and you have a lot of words, I don't know, with different words, with 10 letters, with 4 letters, with 7 letters, with insects, in the name of, I don't know, butterfly. But more and more, I start to believe in not determinate things, you know. No, I don't believe anymore in like the mystical number of 7 or 5 or 3. I believe in the square roots of 2 or square roots of less 1, you know, then approximative number.
I liked very much what you said about not understanding a historical point. I think my way is a little similar, but because it's more related to some technical problem or functional problem or conceptual problem that I want to solve. I mean, lots of time my ideas start when I'm playing with a software or playing with an instrument, and I say, what would happen if I mix this with that, or if apply this procedure? I'm very much, and that's because of my interest in conceptual writing or conceptual art in general, this idea of producing a set of rules and procedures and very arbitrary restrictions to produce something. And if it works, it works. And if it don't, if it doesn't, it doesn't, and it's no problem. And that's why I ended up using artificial intelligence or other softwares. It's like that same way of working. It always begins with some problem of that kind.
What do you think about the term nonsense? Does it apply to any of what you're doing, or do you think it's not appropriate?
Deleuze, he make a difference between sense and signification, because you know, like, and I don't know, in French, also in English a little bit, but it's like you have the word sense is not only the meaning, it's also the perception, el sentido, also in Spanish, you know, estamos sintiendo. And that, you know, Spinoza, the philosopher, talk about a lot about that, you know, like, you can live your life like in joy or in sadness, in a way, you know, like if you, how you put yourself in that connection. And I think, yeah, in a moment, nonsense is like non serviam, you know, or like a non that kind of moment of the where the human or the poet, you have to say no to that, or no to this, or no to that, no to the, you know. And but how Felipe say, it's not just there. You have to recreate a new kind of, but sense, but a kind of new kind of perception. You know, a poem is always the half part of the poem is made by the poem. The other half part is made by the reader or the spectator. You know, and you finish that kind of experience of, I don't know, when you I read a Paul Celan poem in a way, a moment, and you can like some of your body, or you know, of your human experience in the poem, and you complete the poem with him, because he has the ability to write in a way that let open the sense, you know, the signification. And that is like, yeah, you talk about Neruda or Zurita, and that time, well, I love this poem and full respect, but at the same time, they close too much a little bit the signification.
Yeah, talking about not understanding things, about non serviam, about the difference between sense and signification, I think it is appropriate to listen to some more of your deep, mysterious, multi-layered sound poetry record, Protoverb. I was quite surprised, really, to discover experimental poetry, sound poetry, like from South America, from Chile, from other countries, from South America, from Mexico, and whatever. And I think people in Germany do not really know a lot about it. You know, they maybe know Pablo Neruda, and it usually doesn't
And
go.
Raúl Zurita.
Yeah, and it doesn't go very far beyond that. What is the state of experimental poetry, especially in Chile right now? Is there anything you can say about that in general?
I can say a few things. I mean, if you people from Germany want to start from a specific place, I think the work of Vicente Huidobro is really important to start with. He was a Chilean poet from the avant-garde that spent a lot of time in Paris. He was part of the Dada movement. He was in touch with the Surrealist. He founded the Creationism, a specific movement. And I think Martin will agree, he's one of the most important, like the founder of the tradition of sound poetry in Chile, at least with a specific book called Altazor, that in the last part of that book is just pure phonetic poetry, like futurist poetry. So that's a very important figure. But if you study like more in general, like the Chilean tradition, there are a lot of examples of visual poetry, poets working with typography, with the layout of the page. There's a very important poet called Juan Luis Martinez in the 70s and the 80s. And there's also a very important poet that worked in Chile and then went to Bulgaria and later to Germany, to Halle. He's called Guillermo Deisler. He died in 1995, but he was an amazing visual poet, very important creator of networks of mail art, and he made most of his job in Germany. So it's one of our common relationships we have with the German tradition. And I think like there has been a very important movement of experimental poetry since the end of the 90s, and especially the beginning of the 2000s, when Martin Gavins, Martin Baquero, Andrés Ambanter, Gregorio Fonten, Ana Maria Bride, me and other people founded the Writers Forum in Chile. Was like a Chilean version of the English Writers Forum of Bob Cohen. But I must say that I think like in the first 5 or 10 years of our work, nobody took us seriously, at least in the literature world. We immediately developed links with people from visual arts and performance and music. For example, we were very much in touch with Cecilia Vicuña. She's also one of the most important poets, but also artists and sound artists in Chile. Tomorrow there's a new exhibition of her work here, just one block from my house. And she has earned a lot of recognition in last years, happily. It took a lot of time for people to took us seriously, but at least they saw that there was something going on, and we persisted doing the no matter what they say. So yeah, I think, for example, now for a kid or a young poet, if he or she starts mixing poetry and performance and music, probably they have seen part of our work and also of work the work of people from other countries. There has been some poetry and music festivals also that have been really important. So I think now there's a very very active community here in Chile, and something that I like very much, like people from normal or textual poetry are starting to think of different mixes and different combinations, and also working with musicians and visual artists, whatever. So I think nowadays it's very active and very vibrant community.
And do you think, is there any specific characteristics about the experimental scene in Chile that is maybe a little different from Europe or North America? Or is there anything that is more characteristic to Chile?
If you ask me more broadly about Chilean poetry in general, I would say that there's a good deal of poets that are very self-conscious of writing, are very ironic, and that's has to do a lot with a very important figure called Nicanor Parra, who was the founder of the anti-poetry. And it's a very funny poet, but also a poet that is always like making laugh of their of the ridiculous act of doing poetry. For example, in my case, I mean, it has been a big influence for me. He didn't do sound poetry, but he did visual poetry. But this idea of not taking poetry too seriously, I think is very common in Chile, not of all the poets, but it's an important tradition. That I would say that has to be. But if you look at the people that are doing sound poetry, for example, it's very wide. And there are people like, I don't know, Luna and Adrian, for example, that work more with a performance, and others that work more with the phonetics of the voice. But others like Martin Gavis, Martin Baquero, and me, who like to use more the technology. I specifically like to use a lot of the computer and not using my body. But Martin, for example, he's a very good performer and he uses his body and moves and all that. So, but I think that there are a lot of. I mean, I wouldn't characterize something very specific in experimental poetry in Chile right now. I don't know how you see it, Martin, but...
No, I think, yeah, at the same time was the beginning of, I don't know, I remember we met together with Felipe in Paris because another project we organized with the guy of the Cultural Embassy of Chile wanted to organize like a contemporary poetry in Europe, and we talked with some friends, Andres Ambanter, Felipe, and we talked about that poets outside of the language, in a way, living in another language, and recover the language for a moment and to talk in that. And that was the first time that I met Felipe, and we became really, you know, quickly close, and we sit together the next day. They were all interesting in mystic places, Ramon Blum, you know, Kabbalah and all that stuff, and say, okay, Felipe, let's go to Felipe was sleeping really early, and me was like in party all night long with poets. But at the morning, Leo, at 9, we were together to the museum. And
yeah,
from
exactly.
That moment, Felipe started, you know, we believed in each other in that way. And then I met Martin Gavins in London. Because he, Luna Nedra Montenegro, you know, a group that Felipe talked already, and Martin Gavins was living in London, and we went to the Writers Forum session. And this was, I don't know, a big discovery for all of us, because we came from Chile, you know, all the in the 90s, all the group of poetry, you know, poetry club or poetry, the Academy Pablo Neruda, you know, if you want to. Participate on the group of poets. It was so sarcastic between them, so destroying each other. No, you don't know how to write. You know, it was terrible. For me, it was no, thank you. I don't want to participate in that kind of relationship between poets, between human beings. And in Writers Forum, we really experimented another kind of reception of poetry. It was like, I don't know if you ever been there, Dirk, or so it was like, I don't know, we were like 40 people, 40 all poets from different kind of poetry, more text, more sound, without letters, with letters, language, not language. And it was a totally free expression and a total respect and a communion, you know, it was like a kind of circle. And the poets, like, you know, like a battle of hip hop, that you know, and like we go in the middle, or dancers, you know, you made your poetry, and everyone was like appreciating in a way, reception, like you feel insecurity to be experimental. And when Martin Gavins returned to Chile, he was so sad because he said, I will not find that spirit in any part of the world. And we said, Martin, let's create that, contact Felipe Casas, contact Andres Ambante, you know, and we start to make that. That we have to create that spirit of of togetherness, like we say from the beginning, between poets. And the Foro de Escritores started to exist, and it was a really, really great moment. And I think it opened, like Felipe said, a space of contemporary artists that we met together in the same bar that we started the meetings like 12 years ago. It went like a bar who nobody knows, like only people from office after, was totally unknown. And we start to make once a month, a Saturday, or once a week in a moment, some meetings, and people came from visual art, from architects, from, I don't know, different, like a kind of new artist interest in that free expression, because it was not like that destroying thing that language, the poets who feel themselves like master of good writing, like they know how to write, and they say that, we will not see some names, but say like the beginning, like I'm the best poet of the town, like say it in that moment. And I think it was really important that work that Felipe Cassen and Martin Gaines make in Chile to okay. I don't know, when Felipe support a project, he's there, and you can believe in him because the thing will happen. And that is was a fantastic moment. And at the same time, that make us know another movement in the different part of the world. In Argentina, with people, Nácar, the Estación Alhoyen, the Rodolfo, all those poets from Argentina and Uruguay, and Clemente Padín, and all the people from there, in Brazil, in Mexico, in England. When we stayed with Felipe some weeks ago in Wales, and we met some poems that we knew by just by, like.
All of us had interest in experimental poetry, but that interest developed when we went to study abroad. Martin went to France, Martin Gaines and Andrés Sambater went to England, Ana María Bride went to Germany. But specifically, I went to Catalonia, and I had the chance to attend the experimental poetry festivals organized by Eduardo Escoffier. I always say, Eduardo, that I learned everything about sound poetry just going to those festivals. When we started like developing our own works, we were very much aware of what was happening, at least in some parts of Europe and also in other countries. And that is very important because I think one of the main problems of experimental poetry or innovative or avant-garde poetry, as you want to call it, is like thinking that you are the first to do something. And I always like to remind that there are traditions, there are people that have been researching and developing projects in sound, in visual poetry. So it's very important, as in like in the normal poetry, to read, to know what has been done, to talk with other people, to share materials. It's the same as in any other kind of art. So I think that's important because I have seen, of course, like people that think that they are doing something really, really new, and it's not quite that.
But is there something that you say that people like in Germany, especially or in Europe, that need to know for poetry, from new poetry? Or you say it's really important to know this poet or this poet's book or this artist's. Is there any recommendation you have?
More than just a poem, I would think it would be interesting for anyone is aware of some poetry and all that, to check Festival PM website. Festival PM is a project that has organized a lot of poetry and music festivals, but it goes from like people singing songs to a performance to readings only with the voice, rock groups, experimental things with computers. Is really, really broad, the kind of things they have been organizing. Project is still going on, and I think it's a very good way to see what has been happening in Chile, but also in Latin America, and with some guests from Europe. So it's a good opportunity, I think, to see what's going on in that intersection of poetry and music.
Okay,
Festival PM.
Well, that sounds fantastic. So please check out Festival PM or Festival Poesia y Música Chile. I will put the link in our show notes. Speaking of poetry and music, I would like to play one more example of Felipe Cousin's Quick Faith. In the beginning of this episode, I mentioned that you both were also involved in creating a much bigger international network of sound poets and artists working on the borders of poetry. It's called Language is a Virus, and the main features of that early network were regular weekly meetings on Zoom, combining talk and performance and just being together somehow. And it was also a idea that came up during the corona pandemic, especially in the beginning of that pandemic. Can you talk about this project and how it started and what your ideas about this were?
We was in the beginning of the pandemic. I don't know how we start, but we talked with Felipe and we said, well, Felipe, we need something, you know, that's the world is totally under a strange thing. We didn't understand nothing. We have closed ourselves in our cluster. And we say, like poets, we need to organize something and open a space for that poetry could exist in that totally strange world. Why not we invite different poets from all the world and we open like a kind of bar or coffee in the cloud to everyone knows that we are there and what we think about that happens, the virus, etc. No, and then we start to talk about William Burroughs and the idea of language is a virus from outer space. That's an old idea of the philosopher Anaximenes.
Yeah, that was the first idea, just to be together. I mean, lots of people started having meetings with their friends, but via Zoom. In our case, it was first of all like meeting with some of our close friends, but after a while, it started to develop as a network. It's great because there's a beautiful tradition in experimental poetry of networks. I mean, concrete poetry, mail art, net art. It's very common that experimental artists try to be in touch, to work together, considering that usually the work of any experimental artist is kind of lonely in their specific context. But you find relationships with people from very different parts of the world that are doing kind of the same things. There were very much people, I mean, like 50 people were participating regularly in 52 sessions we made. It was a whole year. It started, as Martin says, like getting together in the beginning. But after that, we wrote a paper together with Martin and Rachel Robinson. It became also a research. After finishing this first cycle, it was a research, like a, we think, like a very good, a complete overview of what's happening right now in different countries about sound poetry, experimental poetry, performance, whatever. It has been for me one of the most rewarding projects I've been involved in last years, and it was completely spontaneous. I mean, sometimes you prepare something a lot and you have a lot of expectations, but we didn't have any expectations when we started this. It was just the need to be together, and it ended up being a very good way to communicate, to learn. I was able to talk and to share my ideas with a lot of poets I've been studying, like you, Dirk. In fact, I've been studying your work some years ago, but we have only exchanged emails, so now we could talk like every week. It was amazing with you, with George Piringer, Joaquin Montesiu, Zoe Scolding. I met her during this project, and lots of other more people. So really, really rewarding experience. And
but it was a work in progress permanently, you know. And the shape that it takes at the end, like some poet presents, and at the end, a collective improvisation was. I don't know. I crossed a rehearsal about what is the best, you know. Let's invite that poet, you know. And but little by little was like a kind of togetherness, you said. I think it's really important that in especially in some poetry, I think we have a kind of close relationship, like a friendship between us, and it's rare in the other side of the poetry. I think it's more. We are more close, it's more easy to meet us like some poets than like textual or classical poets. And that is like, I think it's one of the most beautiful things of some poetry, that kind of togetherness and also with other arts, because some poetry is more easy mixable with painting, dance, you don't know, because we have not that virus of language in a way. We are immune to that, you know, because we go before or beyond language, then language for us is not more an enemy. And that's maybe the inner idea, subconsciousness at all of that project. It was how we can share between us with the world that kind of immunity of some poets as that idea of a virus, the language like a virus.
Yeah, All the Language is the Virus. Talks and sessions are actually online on YouTube. I put a link in the show notes, which are probably getting quite long now. So you stress the importance of connecting, of creating togetherness through poetry and art, which is sometimes actually easier if you go beyond language. So one of the things that impressed me most during the Language is the Virus sessions were the spontaneous improvised sound sessions at the end of the talks. And since we're all coming from different language backgrounds, these sessions created a connection between all of us without the use of any regular language. So I thought maybe to the end of our talk, we could also try a short sound session between us, between Santiago de Chile, Paris, and Frankfurt. So what do you think? Shall we start our impro? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Zukunft steht still. Zukunft steht still. Zukunft. two, chair, still, still. Well, thank you so much, Felipe and Martin Vaquero. And we should again name your latest works. Felipe Kusten, you have this project. It's called The Joy of Rain. So it's a real poetry book you can buy, I guess, online or wherever.
On lulu.com. But as always, everything that I published, at least my poetry works, is available to download via PDF. In my website, felipekassen.net.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show
notes. Oh, great.
Martin, your latest work has been Sound Poetry LP.
LP, yeah.
LP, Protoverb it's called, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful work. I just got it not too long ago, actually. So I'm really happy. But it's really beautiful, and it's also a very, very intense sound landscape kind of thing. And so I can really recommend that. I'll put that in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining this podcast, Felipe and Martin.
Thank you to you.
Thank you.
Organize things to be like you are not only a great performer, great poet, also you organize, you create new space in the human existence. Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you so much. So you heard the second episode of Possible Poetry. My name is Dirk Hulstrong. My guests were Felipe Kusten and Martin Vaquero. And you'll find more information about my guests in the show notes on the Podigy blog. If you don't want to miss new episodes, please subscribe to Possible Poetry on Podigy. But you can also find Possible Poetry on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcast, on YouTube, actually, and now also on the great podcast platform for literature. It's called Lit Radio in Germany. Thank you, and hope to hear and see you again soon, Felipe and Martin.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, our friend Dirk. We love you.
Possible Poetry.